Hello, hello everyone, and welcome to the third innings. My name is Maxwell Charlesworth, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and good friend Prasuk Jain. So Prasuk, with the prevalence of T20 cricket nowadays, many of us are used to so much action being jam-packed into like a minuscule amount of time. However, it never ceases to amaze us when a test is over so quickly. It's such a rare thing that we see. Who knew so much could happen in 842 deliveries? Could you tell us a bit about what happened?
Well, this is a game of cricket that could have used a third innings. In terms of what happened, England won the toss and they didn't have to think enough before choosing to bat. Little did they know what was about to come. They were bundled out for 112 in the first innings, even after Crawley provided them with a very good start with a 53. A bulk of the damage was done by Akshar Patel once again with a 6 for 38. India, after a very good start at 99 for 3, they were in a panic mode and they got all out for 145. Rohit Sharma did most of the scoring with a 66. Root, with his golden arm, picked up a fifer, his first fifer, 5 for 8. Leach, impressing again, picked up a 4 for 54. England in the second innings would have hoped for at least 150 to stay in the game, but they could only manage 81, the highest scorer being Stokes for only 25. Akshar Patel, the local boy, picking up another fifer, making 11 for the game. He picked up 5 for 32, and his partner in crime, Ashwin, picking 4 for 48. India just had to chase 49 and they didn't really make a fuss about it. They chased without any loss, winning by 10 wickets, Rohit Sharma making 25 out of those runs. It really looked like the batsmen had a flight to catch. Someone should have told them that the next game is on the same ground, in the same city. It was a bizarre game of Test cricket. And I really hope the next one can provide us with some more proper cricket and not something like this.
Akshar Patel, what a superstar. Not the only positive thing for India in that test, a couple of milestones as well. Ishant Sharma's 100th test match, debuted in 2007, so it took him 14 years to play 100 tests, in and out of the side obviously a bit, started off his career averaging a bit over 30, he's dropped that down a lot now, going really well. Ashwin took his 400th test wicket as well, beat Lyon to the party, averaging 24.95, the 77 matches, an economy rate of 2.8. Wow. Absolutely ridiculous. He's really proving recently that he's not just a subcontinental bowler. We saw that in the Australia-India series, and he's going to cause some selection headaches for the Indian selectors when it comes to the English series away from home. Root's first fifer in Test cricket, as you said. What a moment. Root. Such... He's an underbowled bowler. You can only really blame that on himself, though, because he's the captain. Especially these conditions, he should have bowled himself really on that first day as well. Bairstow collected his 11th and 12th ducks in Test cricket, almost enough to open up a shooting gallery pretty soon. Other than that, it was, besides the wickets falling in a heap constantly, it was a pretty uneventful Test match.
Absolutely, a wonderful journey for Ishant Sharma. Really happy for him. Also for Ashwin picking up 400 wickets, and we all have seen what he can do with the bat. It's a real gem for the Indian team. Very happy for Root as well, picking up his first fifer. That smile on his face said it all. And I don't think I have enough to say for Bairstow.
Sheepish grin that Root had.
Exactly.
Like, into that ball aloft to the air.
Exactly. So humble and so down to earth.
Exactly.
Nothing to say for Bairstow. I hope he is able to open his shooting gallery soon with a bit more ducks. We have seen a lot of things happen in the space of 2 days, but let's start at the start, at the team selection. Anderson and Broad were seen together, probably for the last time. What do you make of this team selection by England? What would you have done?
Well, I think this team selection can be put down to one thing, really, and that is the selector's complete lack of faith in Dominic Bess. Dominic Bess is not a world-class spinner, you know. And I guess when you play Test cricket, you technically need to be a world-class spinner. But I think he's good enough to be a second spinner. And Leach is proving more and more that he can be that frontline spinner that England need. So Bess could have done him a lot of help. But in the end, Joe Root had to pick up that slack. But this entire wrong team selection was built around the fact that they didn't have enough faith in Bess, so they picked a team that wasn't right for the conditions, wasn't right for the pitch. Just because it's a pink ball test, like we said in the previous podcast, just because it's a pink ball test does not mean that it's not a subcontinental wicket.
So I wish the England selectors listened to our podcast.
Yeah, I wish so too. I think it would be really handy for them. Yeah. Pick up a couple of tricks. I don't think this is the last time we're going to see Anderson and Broad together, but it's definitely becoming a rarer and rarer sight. It's like an albino elephant in the bush in Africa. It's getting rare now. I think we're going to see them probably once in this upcoming English summer play together. I think they have a wealth of seeming options when they're at home, the likes of Sam Curran, Chris Wokes, Mark Wood. They're much more likely to play them there than they are in this India series. It's definitely a rare sight. I think we are going to see them a couple more times together, though, before Anderson's career is over, probably at the end of the Ashes coming up at the end of this year. What about you? What did you make of the English selection?
Absolutely spot on. I think it was a very English team. I think they selected the team for the pink ball and not for the pitch they are playing on. It would have been a perfect team if they were playing in home conditions, in their home conditions. But for these conditions, it was just mind-boggling. Why would they pick three seamers on this pitch, having seen what has happened in the first two matches, especially in the last match? And they should have read the pitch better.
Mm. Well, even though it was a very English team, I think they still showed a lot of positives. So Leach, like I said, has really proven that he's able to adapt, even if it is three quarters of the way through a series. He is able to adapt to conditions. He's bowling with a little less top spin, more side spin, which is what you need in India. You don't really pick up wickets unless you've got that natural bounce. You don't pick up wickets by putting this artificial bounce, by putting top spin on it. And he's made his release point a little bit rounder, more like 2 o'clock rather than 12 o'clock on the clock. Root really deserved those wickets that he took. He just immediately saw from the Indian bowling in the first innings how to bowl on this pitch, where to pitch it, and he really pitched it in that 1.5 to 1.8 meters in front of the batsman just to make it tough to come forward or back to, which is why he picked up those wickets. He didn't pick up those wickets by chance, like some of the commentators were suggesting on the stream, but he picked up those wickets through skill. And that's why I think he's under-bowling himself, because he is able to do things like this, taking fifer. And it's not the first time that he's picked up wickets. It's not this novelty fifer. He's shown that he can play. He picked up wickets all throughout his career. Generally, when he comes on to bowl, he will pick up a wicket, and then he might take himself off. We see that in ODI cricket as well, where he's been bowling himself a bit more. Well, when Morgan's been bowling him. Crawley's 50 in the first innings, like you mentioned. He's really showing the public and the selectors as well why he's their first choice for that opening slot. He's ahead of Burns now. I think he's ahead of Sibley. He's ahead of Roy, if they had any thought of bringing him back. He scored most of his runs against seamers at the start of that innings and then started to struggle against spin, but it wasn't an easy pitch to play against seam bowling either. I think 40 wickets would have fallen to seam if there was 5 days of play and if no spinners were selected. There was movement through the air, there was movement off the pitch. The only thing the Indian seamers did wrong, so Ishan and Bumrah, where they were bowling a bit too wide to him early on, so he was able to cash in on those drives off the front foot without too much danger.
Well, we saw what we saw. We saw how fast the test match finished. But what does the history say about test matches ending so quickly? Have you seen that before?
No. I haven't seen anything like this in my lifetime, which, you know, isn't incredibly long. But I think it still makes a point. This is the 10th lowest scoring test match in history. It is the lowest, I think, in the covered pitch era. And I think we would have ended up with a better pitch if this pitch might have been left uncovered. Just let a bit of grass grow. It's not illegal to let a bit of grass grow. It depends what type of grass. But the type of grass that you grow on a cricket pitch, just let it grow. Let it grow. Let it flow, man. What do you think about the pitch?
How do you think that went?
Absolutely, especially when you're playing with a pink ball. Yeah, the curator is supposed to leave a bit of grass on it for the ball to behave normally. And We saw what we have seen in the history with not many matches ending up like this, and it's not a good advertisement for Test cricket, and I hope it doesn't happen in the future.
It's very easy to say, well, the game ended in 2 days, and therefore it's the pitch's fault. We can't put the sole blame on the pitch. A lot of those shots were shocking, as I believe you get into more detail later. The shots were shocking, but it's the combination of this pink ball with the pitch that was provided for this game. So the amount of grass that was left on that wicket, barely visible, it was not enough to make the pink ball act like a normal cricket ball. So the goal with this pink ball isn't to create a ball that swings more than the red ball or spins more than the red ball or does anything different to the red ball. The goal with this pink ball and day-night tests in general is to be able to play a game of cricket that's as close to red ball cricket as possible while still being able to play it at night time. That's the goal. So if you're creating a pitch where that is not possible because you don't leave enough grass on, from the recommendation of the amount of grass of 7 millimeters from the ball provider, so the ball provider, SG, is telling you, leave 7 millimeters of grass if you want the ball to behave normally. You don't leave that 7 millimeters on. You have other groundsmen, like at Eden Gardens, who held the first pink ball test in India. He recommended about 7 millimeters of grass as well. If you take all that grass off, of course the ball is going to behave differently. And that's why you have Joe Root saying things like when the ball pitches, it comes, spins on as if it's speeding up. So you can have balls that are acting like a top spinner, but they're still moving 30, 40 centimeters sideways. And that is what the issue was. It was bad shots played. It was bad pitch. And it was a bad pitch for the ball that was used. For a red ball, I think that would have been a decent pitch. But for the ball that was provided and the ball that was planned for, it didn't rock up on the first day and say, hey, actually, it's going to be a day-night test. The curator knew this, and I think they went a bit overboard trying to prepare a spinning pitch to guarantee a win. I think they went a bit overboard on that. They could have made a pitch that spun half as much, and they still would have won because the English batsmen are so incapable against spin. But they took it that one step further just to guarantee that win and guarantee pretty much that spot in the World Test Championship. But yeah, what do you...
Yeah. I think the curators took it literally with the day-night game, I think, because it finished in one day and one night. But as you said, the pink ball behaved abnormally. We saw because 21 wickets out of the 30 fell to straight deliveries, and that was mostly because the straight deliveries were coming faster than they should have. Only two wickets were taken by pacers. We saw that by Ishan Sharma and Archer early in the innings. And the rest were beating outside the edge on the turn. So it included three from Root against the left-handers, which were in quick succession. So a couple of them got the outside edge towards the keeper of the slips, and a few of them were also caught in the deep. So we saw that the ball was behaving weirdly off the pitch. It shouldn't. But we also saw some rash shots by the batsmen, something that they should have avoided, especially on this pitch when it's difficult to bat on. Getting caught in the deep in such an innings is not what you play Test cricket for. And I still think the pitch was better than the second test in terms of consistency, in terms of the rough areas that we saw. The ball was turning consistently. The ball was always turning. It was not really bouncing less than it should be. We see in, if you compare it with the T20 game, we see 10 wickets for in a T20 game as well. And I don't think we say it's a bad pitch because we saw 10 wickets fall in within 20 overs. We saw Crawley and Rohit how to bat on this pitch. I wouldn't say they were very patient with the strike rate they had, but they showed that if you stay there and if you believe in yourself, believe in your batting, apply yourself, you can score runs.
We also saw that with Gill, who was having trouble against the English seamers, especially in that first innings. He took 27 balls to get off the mark, I believe, but he stuck in there, he applied himself, and he did the hard yards. That's a role that Dom Sibley normally plays for England. But Dom Sibley didn't think he was able to do that on this pitch. Dom Sibley thought that his only mode of scoring runs would be to attack, and so did every other English batsman in that side. And that was, in my opinion, mostly because of the pitch. Not because of the pitch turning an excessive amount, but because of the turn, that therefore they got done by the straight one when it came out because they were not expecting it. And then it just becomes a matter of how many of those straight balls were planned, so an arm ball, and how many of those were ones that went straight on, mm-hmm. just off the pitch. And this is where Drewitt's comments about it feeling like it sped up as well got them in trouble. Because when that ball is, it feels like it's speeding up, coming off a good length as well, it's hard to get forward to it and it's hard to get back to it. So you're stuck in this two mindset. And we saw that a lot with Volley Pope. He didn't know what to do. He was jumping sideways, his back shoulder became completely squared on. You don't really see that, especially at spin. They just really didn't have an answer to this because they hadn't seen anything like this before. And whether that's pitches in the county championship not being conducive enough, or because they keep docking points for pitches that are actually spin conducive, I don't know. But it's surely an issue that England aren't going to have an answer for until they fix the system that they have at home. So you're not going to win tests in Asia if you penalise grounds like Taunton and Somerset for being spin conducive. But that pitch didn't spin that much. That pitch spun probably less than the first day of the first test that we've seen in this series. So really, England are a victim of their own devices here. They're a victim of their own selection, and they're a victim of their own first-class setup in this situation, I think.
But we saw that even from the Indian batsmen, as rightly admitted by Kohli and Rohit Sharma after the game in the press conference, they admitted that the batting performance by them and by English batting team was under par. And the pitch isn't the only reason that this test match ended the way it did. But having said that, I think we also cannot deny the fact that the local boy, Akshar Patel and Ashwin, they bowled superbly. The consistency that we saw with Akshar Patel's bowling, I saw it in the pitch map. He bowled 0% overpitched and he bowled 0% short balls. Everything was in between that perfect length on this pitch. God. And we all know what Ashwin does. We just described what happened to Ollie Pope. And that's the guile Ashwin possesses with his drift and with his dips in the bowling. And as you said, I don't think England has any answers to that sort of a spin bowling at this point of time. And they need to really come out with something if they want to make a match of it. But these comments about the pitch and these negative things we have been hearing the last 2 days have really fired me up. But I think as far as the game is concerned, we have the same fired up moment for our show. What do you make of the third umpiring that you've seen in the test?
Well, I did a bit of digging and found out that the third umpire's last name is Shamsuddin. Mm-hmm. And I think the first part of that last name really describes the third umpiring for this test quite well. A sham, complete and utter sham. I believe I messaged you over WhatsApp just the words, "Due process for both sides, please."
You do, absolutely. Yeah?
That was not given. Throughout the series, we've seen troubles with the third umpiring. The on-field umpiring, credit to them, has been brilliant. Difficult pitches to umpire on. I'm not just trying to dismay the umpires here. Difficult pitches to umpire on, they did a great job. Barely any overturned, and when they were overturned, it was for reasons like root jamming the ball between his bat and pad, stuff like that. But when you have a situation where, like Zach Crawley pointed out, when Jack Leach edges a ball and it's caught, soft signal is out, but it goes upstairs just to check the ball bounce, and they look at maybe 6 or 7 different angles, and then they come to a conclusion. In the end, he's out, you know. And then Stokes drops a catch, and it wasn't out. I want to make that perfectly clear. It wasn't out, but you can't tell that really off one angle. In the end, he was able to tell that off one angle, but that's where this argument has a little bit of a dismay to it. Is he was able to tell off one angle, but it doesn't look good if you're not doing the same process for both sides. So we had the similar situation with the Rohit Sharma stumping. There was one camera angle that really would have shown the whole picture, and that was the stump cam. Did we see the stump cam? No. We didn't see anything about the stump cam. We didn't see the stump cam afterwards either. So especially with the foreshortening on the camera, you need to check more than one angle. So with that Stokes catch, there was a hint that maybe he had a finger underneath the ball, which think it's highly unlikely. But if there was, you need to check another angle just to find out. But I think England did the right thing after the first day, going to the match referee, not going to the media and having a whinge, but going to that match referee, making an official complaint about the third umpiring. And I think we saw a result from that, with the third umpire taking a large amount of time on that Joe Root decision in the second innings, the LBW, where he jammed the ball in between his bat and pad. I think it was about 6 minutes that he took to make that decision. That is a long time. But if you take if you can take 6 minutes to allow players an unplanned drink break, to swap their gloves, to swap their helmets, anything like that, just to have a chat to each other about tactics, then you can take the 6 minutes to make sure that you make the right decision.
Absolutely. And what we see with the umpiring, usually it's questions being raised on the on-field umpiring, because that's the most difficult one to do, especially on these pitches, as you rightly mentioned. But getting doubts on the third umpiring is a shame to test cricket, because with the current standards and technology that we have available, there shouldn't be any decision which ends up being made wrong. We have many evidences to support. We have seen, especially in these sort of low scoring games, how costly can one decision be. That Stokes decision, yes, we eventually saw it was not out, but the angles that we saw to decide it was not out, the third umpire didn't use them. The third umpire just used one angle, he made the decision, and then we were shown multiple angles later in the stream, and then we saw, okay, it was indeed not out.
Yeah.
But the risk that the third umpire is taking, and exactly, the reason is unwanted, because if the reason is that we don't have enough time, we had three more days in the test match in terms of time. If you can spend another 5 minutes and make the right decision, and then all the players are happy and satisfied, and you are satisfied as the third umpire to have made the right decision, I think that's what test cricket should be about.
Yeah, and it's not an overrate thing either. Exactly. Because DRS decisions do not go towards your overrate. Those are factored in.
Exactly.
So injuries are also factored in, stuff like that. Planned drinks breaks, they're also factored in. What's not factored in is 20 minutes after drinks break, calling on for another drink. I understand it's hot, but 20 minutes after another drinks break? You kidding me, mate? That's like five overs. Like, get on with it. Like, we wanna see some cricket being played. In the end, we only got 2 days of cricket. Maybe they could have taken even more time, stretched out to 3 days. But it was disappointing. And we saw with the but there's a lot of talk about, well, these decisions haven't been costly, but it just takes one decision to become costly. So in the second test, if Rahane went on to score a lot of runs after the third umpire didn't give due process for both sides and continued to check if he had hit the ball after it came off his bat, if he went on to score more runs, that would have been costly. And there's a lot of talk about, especially for that decision, is, oh, well, Rahane got out soon after. Well, what if he didn't?
Exactly.
Like, we're talking hypotheticals here, but in all seriousness, what if he didn't? What if he went on to score 100 in the end? England lost the test anyway.
And in the hindsight, we can see that he didn't score enough runs, but at that point of time, in the view of the third umpire, he can't think, what if Rahane doesn't score?
Yep.
But if he scores a century, would you blame yourself? No. It's very, very disappointing as a lover of test cricket. I hope it gets rectified.
Yeah. Well, Suki, I think even I, on this pitch, would be able to bowl a wrong one. Maybe I could just pitch it into that cavern of a footmark. Maybe it'll bounce in another direction. So I'm going to throw another verbal one at you.
Let me get my bat straight.
You can pull an Ollie Pope and just jump out the way. Would England's performances be getting better or worse if this was a 7-match series or if this was a 10-match series? Basically, what I'm asking is, if this was a longer series, would we see England becoming more competitive or less competitive? Has this juggernaut of India just rooted themselves so deep inside their head? Or are they just being outplayed now and they'd be getting better as the series went on?
I don't see England getting back from here. I don't see England having any answer for this Indian juggernaut that we are seeing right now. We are seeing from the first test match, the margin of defeat is getting higher and higher. And England's performance, the batting performance against the spin particularly, is getting worse. It's the mental blow that India has inflicted on England's batting. And I don't see it getting better, even if it was an infinite match series, be it 7, be it 9, whatever. I don't see it getting better for England. I see it getting worse as the series goes on. They're going to have, with the selection rotation policy as well, they're going to have multiple chopping and changes, and that's not going to help them either. And I think the damage that India has done is going to carry on. And even for the next test, I don't see England showing any sort of competition for India, and I expect them to go 3-1 up. I think it's my turn now. On this sort of a pitch, I think even I can bowl a long one to you. I'm not even a spinner. You say even I, but you are leg spinner. But I think, yeah, on this pitch, even I can spin the web.
Like a tweaker.
Yeah, like a tweaker. Shane Warne. But it's a tough one. What would you do when Ravindra Jadeja is fit to play again? What would you do to the team, both home and away?
I would teach you how to keep. And some backup.
No, in all seriousness, this is a lose-lose-lose-win situation, the winner being Jadeja. I think India kind of has to have him in their side because he's such a good player and his batting is really that key. Then it's just a question of who do you drop out, because it's unfair to every single person that you're thinking to drop out. Obviously, if he was fit for the next test, you'd be dropping Sundar. But he's not fit for the next test, so that's a pointless conversation. But like I said, for the away series in England, where they're going to have to drop another spinner already to bring in another seamer. So then Sundar goes out for a Mohammad Shami or an Umesh Yadav or someone like that. Then you have the questions of, do you drop Rahane, maybe? Do you drop Ashwin? I would be more tempted. You might drop Ashwin, but you wouldn't call it a drop. You're just saying, well, Jadeja's our overseas spinner. But Ashwin proved in Australia he can be an overseas spinner. Then you got the question of, well, do you drop Akshar Patel? And you might drop Akshar Patel. I think that would be the most likely option. Akshar Patel came in as, technically, the replacement for Jadeja. So when Jadeja's fit, he comes back in. But that is so unfair to Akshar Patel after he's taken a 5-for and now a 10-for in his 2 tests that he's played. But he's untested in England, even though he played county cricket, yes, I believe, for Durham. So he has experience in England, but he doesn't have test cricket experience in England, whereas Jadeja has been there, done that, and he's a more of a safer bet. So I think, yeah, and he's a bit of a better batsman as well, average of in the 40s away from home, I believe 41 or 42 or something like that. So yeah, my two options, most likely options, I think would be Rahane gone, but I think the more likely option would be dropping Akshar Patel for Ravi Jadeja and keeping Akshar Patel as that third spinner at home
option.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially away. I think in England, we wouldn't risk playing 6 bowlers.
No.
So dropping Rahane would be very interesting, but poor Akshar probably has to miss out. It's going to be very sad for him after having these performances, but that's the positive headache that the Indian selection is going to have. Also, with the pace department, I think with the sort of pacers India has on the bench, it's going to be a good headache for them to select out of. When Mohammad Shami comes back, yeah. Umesh Yadav, Mohammad Siraj,
Hardik Pandya,
if he starts to bowl.
Yeah.
Interesting moments to come.
Yeah. I believe we are protesting our moment of the game segment this week, just because of how terrible this match was.
Yeah.
And our silly point for this week is the pitch, because it was absolutely ridiculous. Well, that's all we have time for today. At the third innings headquarters. We are very disappointed in this test match. Hopefully we will see a better test match coming up soon. Stay tuned for our fourth test preview coming out middle of next week.
And we are going to have to wake up early again for the next match.
Oh,
it's not a day-nighter.
No, don't remind me. We'll just not go to sleep. Yeah, no worries. Well, I'm Maxwell Charlesworth. And on behalf of myself and my co-host Prasuk Jain, it's been a pleasure having you company. Please make sure you leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. Follow the socials in the description to stay updated. And send us a tweet if you have any questions you want answered on the show. And we will see you guys soon.
Thank you.